Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
And grand rising. Thank you all for joining us today as we address a topic that is uppermost in people's minds, even if they are in good health. I'm Naima Latif, sitting in for our host, Dr. Debbie Green, as she continues to improve her health, and we wish her and send her loving, healing energies. It's not easy being one who handles the grief of so many. And as a therapist, she is constantly working with people who are going through the grief process. And because we're all connected, we're all energy beings connected to each other, we feel each other's pain. We feel each other's sadness, we feel each other's joy. So often when we are in the business of sharing feelings, we can easily take on the energy of those feelings
it can affect our health sometimes. So every now and then a healer has to take time away to heal themselves. And we certainly send our dear sister, Dr. Debbie Green, all the love and support in her restoration process, because she's given so much healing energies to others. On Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green, we often address the process of grief, because no matter who you are, you're going to go through the process of someone transitioning out of your life. You're going to go through the emotions of feeling that like that person has left you. You're going to experience feelings of despair, abandonment, and you're going to feel feelings of sorrow. And there's a whole grieving process. Sometimes you go through feelings of anger, like, why did they leave me? And how could they have abandoned me this way? And sometimes there's feelings of guilt. So we go through a whole process when someone transitions back to the spiritual realm. And much of our feelings come from the lack of information. And the lack of information comes from the fact that we in many of our cultures have not been allowed to really know what happens. So this process, which is a very natural process, it's often shrouded in mystery and superstition and fear. And as a result, we grieve because we're believing that our loved one is gone for good. We'll never see them again, and they can't communicate with us anymore, and we miss them. We haven't been told that no one is ever gone. We're always here, just living in another place, energetically. Living in another dimension, another time-space reality that is not visible with the physical eyes, but can be felt with one's energy. We're never told this because the belief systems that we have adopted and been indoctrinated with have not allowed us to know. Earth is merely one school of learning for the soul's journey back to enlightenment. And if we were allowed to know, that journey would be so much quicker. But what happens when we're born, when we come from the unseen spirit realm into physical manifestation inside a body? We also go through the process of forgetting. And so, because we can't remember why we chose to come here and what we intended to do, we live our lives in fear of the end of this journey. Well, that's no longer necessary, because between the modern technology that resuscitates people after what would have been a clinical death, and between those who have gone through the process of hypnotherapy back not only to past lives, but in between lives when they actually experience what has been called death. And for those who have simply received information from the non-physical, those who have tuned in to the universal mind, those who have been allowed to remember and have shared what they know, we now know exactly what happened after so-called death. So today we're going to share what really happens after you die, because now we know for sure. So the first thing we want to share is part of a series, Life Explained by Hans Wilhelm. And in the series by Hans Wilhelm, a best-selling author and teacher of children, producer of children's books, and one who breaks down life so simple a five-year-old can understand it, Hans Wilhelm explains that first step after you realize you've crossed over and you receive something called the life review. And this life review is important for your realization of the lessons that you came to learn and your evaluation of those lessons and how well you learned them. It isn't a time of punishment or damnation or sentencing as if you're a criminal. It's a time for you to review. Just like when you take a test and then the teacher passes back your test and you look at your scores and you see which questions you got right and which ones you got wrong. You go, oh, I'll have to study. So the next time I take this test, I can pass those questions. That's really all it is. But we're going to share with you this information given by Hans Wilhelm on what is the life review. We speak of judgment, and many people are waiting for judgment from an angry God who is like a punitive parent that beats you because you made mistakes. Well, this isn't really what happens. You are the judge because it's your standards upon which you judge yourself. Now, were we not told in the scriptures, the quote by the one we know as Jesus, judge not lest you be judged? Now, some people reinterpret that as judge not lest God judge you, but that's not what was said. What was said is that you're going to be judged by yourself using the same yardstick with which you judge others. So if you are harsh and unforgiving, that's the way you're going to view yourself when you judge yourself. And this is important to know, so that you can choose to be less judgmental of others. You can choose to be forgiving because you're going to need that same spirit of forgiveness for yourself. If we understood that, would we be as judgmental as we are of others? Would we be as unforgiving if we knew this about what happens when we get a chance to review our own lives and see what we did and how it affected others? Well, we do want...
Today I want to explore with...
Give me a moment. Today we want to make clear what happens so that when we go through what is inevitable for all of us, we can be prepared, not with sadness or regret, but with anticipation for those questions in life we had that we really didn't quite understand. We can look forward to getting greater understanding, because that's what it's all about. Not for us to be angry at ourselves or to condemn ourselves, but to understand where we were in error. So let's take a look at the life review. What is the Life Review.
Today I want to explore with you the meaning and purpose of a life review.
As immortal cosmic beings of infinity, our life on planet Earth is like a short school term. At the end of any school term, there is usually an assessment, an evaluation. Many of us are not aware that each one of us will take ourselves through such an assessment at the time of our physical death, when we leave this planet. This assessment is commonly called a life review. Let's look at it a little closer. At the time of our death, when our soul is ready to separate from the physical body, there comes a moment when our whole life rolls by, like a rapid motion movie, and we are allowed to look back once more. Fully conscious, we evaluate our past, the earthly life, down to the most insignificant sensation. We will evaluate it from different points of view, which we have never done before. The main criterion is that of actualized, unselfish love and service. The exact moment of this review varies. In many cases, the soul is still connected to the physical body via the silver cord. This way, the dying person will have one final opportunity to make amends, forgive, or ask for forgiveness before he leaves the Earth school. But very often, this review will take place after the soul has arrived in the spiritual spheres. The life review is not always like a projection on a big movie screen. It can be like a panoramic view, or like many TV screens, or a three-dimensional holographic experience, or some have this life review in an amphitheater or an arena. Others have their review read from the Akashic records by a spirit being. In many cases, we are accompanied by our guardian spirit and other beings of light, like a council of elders, who are observing the review with us. These beings of light can fill us with love for this process so that we can feel totally safe, supported, and deeply loved in their presence. This is significant because our life review can show us moments, habits, or deeds that we are not proud of. We cannot escape from who we really are. In the spiritual world, nothing remains hidden because we no longer have a physical body with which we could fool others and even ourselves. This can be a very painful but humbling experience. We can see this life review also just like a mirror that reflects back to us the contents of all our feelings, thoughts, words, and deeds exactly as they have affected others. We see the ripple effects of our actions. We may feel how others have once felt because of us and what future choices they have made because of us. Without this mirror, we may never be aware of how even the most innocent acts or words had impacted others, either positively or negatively. In our life review, we may also see why other people have hurt us. We may gain insight into their own personal drama and struggle that made them a thief, abuser, or just a very unhappy and imbalanced person. We may suddenly feel deep compassion for those we thought were our enemies. We now sense the truth in Plato's famous words, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a harder battle." What if, during our life review, we may be surprised to find out that all the things we thought were terrific, like all our grand and worldly achievements, are actually of very little value or totally meaningless now? Why? Because they were mostly done for ourselves. What if it may turn out that deeds and thoughts that we might have considered to be unimportant are far more meaningful than we could possibly have imagined? For instance, what if we may find out that a simple smile that we once gave to somebody and which we had immediately forgotten was the most important event in our life? Yes, let this sink in. It is often an event that appears insignificant, but may be the whole reason why we incarnated and came to planet Earth in the first place. In such moments, we had acted spontaneously from our heart, from love, instead from our mind or intellect. We had expressed love in a purer, greater, and unconditional manner. Throughout this whole process of the life review, we will be our own judge. Nobody else will judge us, not even God, because God is love, and love does not judge. Even the beings of light who may be with us will not judge us. On the contrary, they may rejoice and even applaud us when genuine love is displayed in our review. They may also ask us questions to help us explore whether our motivations were based in love. We will be our own judge over our past thoughts and actions. This is a moment where we can see how we have measured up to our goals and mission in life. Our life review is a form of self-appraisal to monitor our spiritual development. But there is one other reason as to why we feel so intensely how our words, thoughts, and actions have hurt and impacted others during our life review. This pain is the basis of our conscience and will be stored in our soul for future reference. So if we in future will once again come into a similar situation, our conscience will quickly bring back this pain to remind and warn us not to do the same mistake again, but think, speak, and act from love. A life review can be humbling, sometimes painful, but it will also be thrilling because it gives us a deep understanding of our life and of our true purpose. In short, we may recognize that the only thing that is important is to live through the heart and be of service and love for one another. The question we will be asking ourselves, how much have I loved unconditionally during my life? Our life review will give us the honest answer. So the message for all of us is that every day counts. Are we willing to clear up anything that comes up throughout the day? Are we willing to bring balance and order back into our life? For if we do, we can actually rewrite the script of our future life review into a much more positive way, particularly when our words, deeds, and actions are based on love. Some of the material for today's video I've taken from the book, Where Did I Come From? Where Am I Going? By Gabriele. And you can find a link to this book under this video, or you go to my website, lifeexplained.com, and go onto the recommendations site. I'm very much looking forward to see you in my next video.
So now,
has launched a lawsuit against the book's Christian specialized.
So now, as we take a look at the reality of what really happens after you die, there's a life review. And as we've been told over and over and over again, the only thing that really matters in this life is how much have you loved. That's the criteria that everything you did is judged. So if we know this for sure, then we don't have to wait until after we transition from this physical life. We can actually review our lives right now in our own minds. Have that life review. Go over everything that you have experienced and ask yourself the question, was I loving? And if someone has hurt you, perhaps you can think about what may have been what was happening inside of them, the reason why they behaved the way they behaved, and perhaps you can find the compassion to forgive. It's important that we be able to see life from the point of view of others, Because in this process of evaluation, we must learn forgiveness. Forgiveness is that key element that elevates us spiritually, because it means we understand that based on what that person experienced, based on the information they received and accepted, based on how they interpreted what happened to them, they could behave no other way. And many of us who look at those who have committed so-called crimes and believing that the answer is that they should receive more pain, perhaps we can realize that they've already received pain and they're responding to the pain they already received. So what it would take to heal them is not more pain, but more love. It's difficult to comprehend that on this side of the veil, as they call it. So the teachings of Hans Wilhelm and so many others that answer the question of what really happens after you die, once you know, then you understand the purpose for being alive. You're here to learn how to love, how to express love in all that you do. And as he said, sometimes that trophy that you won for your speech competition, it made you feel good. But maybe that smile that you gave to a homeless person had more value in the grander scheme of things, of what's important for your growth as a soul, as a consciousness, being aware that all that you do affects the people around you. We are all connected to those whose lives we touch and those who we can't see, because we're touching their lives as well. Even people in places across the world are affected by the energy we put forth in ways that we'll never understand until we leave these bodies. Now is an important time for us to understand the meaning of the transition out of this physical body, because so many people are choosing to transition out of their physical bodies at this time. And those who are still here are living in fear, believing that death is somehow a punishment for their being less than perfect, perfection being a judgment in the eyes of people living in this physical realm. But truly, we're already perfect. We're a perfect expression of the divine energy of creation, perfect in our uniqueness. And if we understand that, then we remove the fear of death and we receive what we're experiencing as a grand adventure, an opportunity to learn and explore and create. That's what this life is. We're not here to suffer, and nor was anyone else sent to suffer for us. And this is a difficult thing for many to grasp, because they didn't understand the teaching of the one we know as Jesus, because they're believing that if people make errors, they deserve to experience pain. And if they didn't experience pain, someone has to. That's the erroneous belief. And that's what holds us back from spiritual growth. This is why these times are important, because we are being faced with our greatest fear. That's what happens during a pandemic, a time when masses of people leave physical existence. People then must face their fear of death. So now it's time for us to face this fear and dispel it, because so many have experienced it and have returned to explain it in a way that will help us accept it and anticipate it, just like we anticipate what happens after we take a test. We want our test scores. We want to see how we did. Have you ever taken some of those standardized tests, the ACT, the SAT, and you know that your score is going to determine perhaps your placement in when you graduate and get ready to go to college? Well, it's kind of the same thing. When we leave this realm, we go on to more learning. But we need to show that we're ready for a higher learning experience by how we do on that test, right? And we get to take it again if we didn't score so well. Well, it's the same thing. This is a classroom that we get to take again because our score, our love score, needs to be high enough for us to go to that next highest level. It's not a punishment. It's a learning experience. So if we understood it that way, how would it change the way we chose to live our lives? We'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll share insight from hypnotherapist Dolores Cannon, who in her therapy sessions have taken people back through the death experience for that life review and that choice that they made to continue their learning experience after their review. This is the journey that we all take, and if we understood it, we could better prepare for it. So we'll be back after this quick break. So we want you to stay with us.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jodi Toussaint. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching The Female Solution. I'm Naima Latif, sitting in for our Thursday host, Dr. Debbie Green, and this is Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And we're giving you an opportunity to learn about the important question of our lives: what really happens after you die? Well, now we know for sure, because we, in fact, have testimonials from people who have had the experience and recalled it. One of the issues that comes up often is heaven and hell. Well, what we learn from past life regression therapist Dolores Cannon hell is an invention of the church. It doesn't exist. Now, I welcome you to call in and say, but the Bible says. I want you to call in because you have to be ready to learn something that's going to be different than what you've been taught if you're going to grow. You're looking at a book that was reinterpreted and reinterpreted and reinterpreted and reinterpreted based on the beliefs that already existed. And so even when certain truths were explained, by the time they got rewritten and rewritten and rewritten in the Bible, they were written according to the point of view and the belief systems of those who interpreted the stories they heard over centuries of time. So hell became a place invented by religious leaders for the purpose of keeping people in a state of fear. It was believed that you would do right if you thought that there was going to be a painful punishment if you did wrong. But then the idea of what's right and wrong also became subjective. Certain things that were considered wrong and sinful and deserving of hell really became an opinion of those who happened to hold positions of authority in the religious structure. And these were the very people, as you might remember if you read the New Testament, that the one we know as Jesus was constantly challenging. Laws and rules that they themselves didn't follow, but they were wielding over others as a way to keep people living in fear. So when he spoke of coming to set the captives free, we were enslaved by belief systems that were incorrect and created by those in authority to keep control over people and enforced with painful punishment. We know the history of the Spanish Inquisition, a time during a dark age in which people were tortured for their beliefs until they agreed to believe what the church structure at the time said you must believe. But what if we've been taught lies? How would we finally discover that what we've been taught is incorrect? Well, the wonderful thing is that we do have access to the truth. We do have stored in our very souls the memory of our journey through life. And this is what hypnotherapist Dolores Cannon helps people recall. And this is why, after so many centuries of misteaching and fear indoctrination, we can let go of that fear. So we're going to share with you a statement by Dolores Cannon as she talks about her book, Between Death and Life. And it's titled Between Death and Life because after you so-called die, there is a period of things that happen before you choose to reincarnate, come back into the flesh, and live again. So what happens between death and life? Well, hypnotherapist Dolores Cannon explains what she shares in her book based on the many thousands of testimonials of those who she took back through the death experience so that they could let go of their fear of death and understand some of the experiences they are having in their current life. So once you know for sure, how do you then choose how you're going to live your life? Well, let's take a look at Dolores Cannon.
My book, Between Death and Life, tells the story of what happens when you die, what does it feel like when you die, and where you go afterwards. These are questions people have asked it for all of eternity. Everybody wants to know, what happens? Where do you go? Well, I found the information from hundreds and hundreds of people, because when I took them through the past lives, I would also take them through the death experience. Each one was reporting the same thing. They all reported what happens when the soul actually leaves the body, and they were all reporting the same places that they went to on the other side. When I've lectured on this book, people say, isn't that title wrong? Shouldn't it be Between Life and Death? No, because it has a different meaning. Between death and life is a whole other existence on the other side as we make our plans to come back into this lifetime. But I put all of these cases together, and I found they were all saying the same thing about the different places you go on the other side. And you will only go to the place that you vibrate at. Your frequency and vibration has to be at a different level to go to the level that you are adjusted to. You can't go to a higher level because your frequencies and vibrations won't match that. So hopefully when you're on Earth, in the school of Earth, you will have learned enough to take you to the next level when you go on to the spirit side. But it's beautiful over there, and I have not found any hell. There is no hell. Everything I've found is beautiful. There are the simple places that are very much like what the church calls heaven, where you can live in a house if you want to, and you can live with your departed family, or you can have any kind of a life that you want. There are beautiful gardens. Or if you are more evolved, you will go to the schools. And that means the most fascinating places, because the schools have all the knowledge that ever was and all the knowledge that ever will be. And we're attending these schools when we're on the spirit side, getting information that will help us when we come back. Also, another beautiful place is what I call the Temple of Wisdom Complex. There they have the healing chambers. If people have died of devastating illnesses or very tragically and suddenly, they will go to the healing chambers where they can be healed before they can go on to the other parts of the spirit world. But also in the Temple of Wisdom Complex is the tapestry room that contains the history of everyone that has ever lived on Earth as threads in this gigantic tapestry. Another part of the Temple of Wisdom is the library. That's my favorite place, is the library. In the library are what people call the Akashic Records. This is what Edgar Cayce called them whenever he discovered them. The Akashic Records are the records of everything that has ever happened to you. This life, all the other lives you've ever lived. And they come in many different forms. Many people see them in a book form. Other ones can see them as holographic images on walls. But in that library are also all the wisdom, all of the answers. There are books that contain everything that has ever been written and everything that ever will be written. And each of you have a book in that library. So when I go there, I like to ask all kinds of questions, because that's where you can find your answers. But the spirit side is all full of wonderful things there, because you also make your plans before you come back into the next life. And you have boards and councils and your guides and your guardians and your masters and elders that help you to make the decisions of what you're going to do the next time you come back into a life. So there's quite a busy place, and it's a very interesting book talking about everything that happens before you come back to the school of Earth. This is Between Death and Life.
And that is...
All right, I planned on doing a video about Dolores Cannon.
And that is Dolores Cannon's book, Between Death and Life. So it really sounds like a great adventure. Sounds wonderful. I already know I want to go to the libraries. I want to go to the schools. I want to do some studying. I'm really looking forward to my transition. When it's time, not trying to rush things. But I definitely don't have the same opinion of those who are looking forward to it or looking at it with dread, believing this awful thing's going to happen or worrying about hell and all of that. That's not my perspective at all. I look at it as a continuing adventure and learning. And so I don't have any fear. And let me tell you, when you live without fear, it's just a whole difference. You're just calm all the time. You don't worry about getting robbed, shot, beat, stabbed. You don't worry about acts of violence. You know that you project a certain energy that doesn't attract that. And you know however you transition, it's okay. I don't worry about car accidents and it took me a while, but I no longer worry about plane crashes. I don't worry about how I'm going to exit this body because I'll be in here until it's time for me to go, until I'm done with my assignment. I'm just trying to do my job that I came to do. But I'm not worried about how I'm going to leave. I'm just not worried about it. And so there is nothing that can upset me at all. Nothing. So if the ultimate thing that people fear, the fear of death, is gone, then what can people threaten you with and make you do something you don't want to do? Nothing. They can't do anything to you to make you do what you don't want to do because you don't have any fear. You don't have any fear of what we've been taught to fear, which is death. And that's what sets you free, when you no longer fear. So now that people have been encouraged to focus on death and to fear it, they are able to be manipulated into doing things which might not be in their best interest because they fear death. So what happens when you no longer fear death? You no longer can be controlled. But if you understand that after you leave here, you do judge how much you loved others and you do regret when you didn't, then it will be your own decision to treat people well because you don't want to feel bad. That has to be the motivating force, not your fear of punishment by an angry, cruel God, but you're simply wanting to feel good about yourself as someone who did good things for people. You want to feel good about that. You don't want to feel bad that you hurt people. That is your incentive. If you knew the truth, that would be a greater incentive than the fear-based lie. Now, just to give you an example of how that works. Now, if you've raised children, let's say you've raised sons, and when they were little boys, and they did something naughty, and you threatened them with a spanking, and they would straighten up because you could spank them. You're mom, you know, you're mom. You can smack them with your hand or your shoe or whatever, but you're mom. You rule. And when they were little boys, they obeyed. But then it came a time when they got to be 16, 17, grew a little fuzz on their chin and upper lip, had a deep voice, developed muscles, outgrew you, and you're looking up at them. What do you have to make them behave? You can't spank them. Now, I know some women who still will try. But truly, you can't use your threat of physical punishment as an incentive for them to do what you tell them, because they no longer need to fear you because they're bigger than you. So fear doesn't work anymore. And if that's all you had, then suddenly you realize you can't control your sons. Now, some say, well, that's why you need fathers in the home. And that's true, too. And sometimes 16-year-old junior has grown taller than dad and has more muscle. And dad realizes that dad can't beat junior anymore. Well, he might try. But do you really want to be beating up your 16-year-old son to get them to behave? Now, some men have said, well, yeah, I had to do that. I had to show them who's boss. And that could work while they're 16. But when they get 25, you probably can't do that anymore because you're probably not stronger than them anymore. And so what do you have? Do they obey you out of fear? Or do they obey you out of love because they don't want to disappoint you? If all you have is fear, eventually that's not going to work. And you're going to have to be more and more abusive in order to enforce the fear. And eventually, you'll create hate. And can you really turn hate into love? So that method of using fear doesn't work when it comes to obedience. The incentive has to be love. I do what you ask because I love you and I want you to be pleased with me. Not, I fear that you're going to cause me pain. So it's the same thing with our religious beliefs. As long as you can make people believe that there's an angry, punitive God that can cast them into a lake of fire and burn their flesh and they suffer forever, as long as you can have people believing that, that might make them obey rules. But what happens if they decide they don't really believe that anymore? Then you have nothing. You have nothing to make them conform to behavior you want them to conform to. That's the issue that the church has. Now that people are not believing these stories, they can't make them behave based on fear of punishment. So what do you have? You don't have anything. You can't control people. So it doesn't work using fear. You must be able to use love. Love meaning that people want to feel good about having treated people well because they're going to feel how they made people feel. This is a change in what we've been taught, but it's a necessary change because using fear doesn't work once a person no longer believes what you've told them is true about the Creator, that they will be punished with some horrible pain forever, as if you can comprehend forever. So how do you get people to do what you want them to do? How do you use love and not fear? Well, you have to teach them what is true. What actually happens? What actually happens? So would this understanding change the way we treat each other And would it change our beliefs about what happens when we transition? And would it change our decisions based on realizing we're going to see all that we did and feel what we did in the way that it affected others? What do you think? Well, our Friday host, Viata Grand Rising, Queen Sistar, she says, and she says, I'm improving my communication with my grandkids. No spanking. Congratulations. I know it was hard because we've got that old school training that this is what you do to make your children behave. You threaten them with pain. Because if you don't threaten them with pain, then what's going to make them behave? Well, now, let's think about that. You want them to behave because they understand the consequences of wrong behavior. Now, if the consequence is merely a spanking, again, it works when they're 5, but what about when they're 15 and taller than you and speaking in a deep voice and got hair on their face? You can't use that, can you? So the reason for their choosing, because they have free will, whether we like it or not, when that 2-year-old says no, they're showing they have a free will. And if we want to guide their free will in a way that keeps them safe, we need to teach them so that they understand. And when they understand that something will hurt them, they will choose not to do that which hurts them. If the only thing they can understand is, well, if I do this, Grandma won't like it and she'll hit me. Well, that works until Grandma can no longer hit them. And if they're going to do the wrong thing that hurts them when Grandma can no longer hit them, then Grandma didn't really protect them in a way that would give them wisdom, but only temporary fear. So congratulations for your growth and understanding of the best way to protect our children from harm. So somebody says, well, how do you make sure your child doesn't stick their hand on a hot stove? Well, maybe if you just teach them what hot is. Because if they get ready to put their hand on the stove and you slap their hand and you say, oh, hot, well, that's not teaching them what hot is. What about if you just let them get their hand close enough so they can feel the heat of the fire to the point where it's uncomfortable? And then you say hot, hurt, and they will understand that it's hot and it hurts. The stove is hot. Not Grandma's hand is hot from hitting them, but the stove is hot. They will understand because they have felt it enough to decide they don't want that feeling, and they'll decide not to put their hand in the fire. And you have taught them what fire is, that it's hot and it hurts and it burns. And therefore, they make the choice not to stick their hand in the fire of their own free will and understanding. So if they're too young to understand and be taught in that manner, they're certainly too young to understand why they're being hit. And if they don't understand why they're being hit, then hitting does not teach. It only instills fear. And fear only lasts but so long. They're going to fear Grandma as long as they're little, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. But when they get 14, 15, 16, and taller than Grandma, that method doesn't work. So this is why we who are now learning must learn a better method of teaching that's based on wisdom and not the installation of fear. So this is challenging in these times where people are seeing so much misbehavior among the young. There's an epidemic of criminal behavior among younger and younger people. And so many people are saying, well, see, it's because they didn't get their butts beat. They need more spankings. No, they need more knowledge. They need the real knowledge of what happens when you hurt someone and how that's going to hurt you when you see how you've hurt someone. They need to be taught the truth about what happens between death and life. They need to be taught about the life review. They need to be taught in a way that gives them understanding so that they can have wisdom and make good choices, because they really don't want to feel the pain they caused others. And the pain isn't coming from a punitive God. The pain comes from themselves. And if they understood it with the clarity, they would make better choices. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to share with you some insights from near-death experiencer Anita Morjani. Anita Morjani had end-stage cancer. And as the doctors called in her family to pay their final respects, expecting her to transition, she left her body, and she had a wonderful experience that helped her understand all the mistakes she had made. And she chose to come back and live a very powerful life of teaching, helping people understand what truly happens on the other side. And she's written a book called Dying to Be Me. And she's written several other books helping people understand so they can make good choices in life. And when we come back, we'll share her challenge to the medical profession. Now that you really know what happens, you need to be helping people rather than keeping them in a state of fear over death and profiting from their fear of death. That's not right. Teach them the truth so that they can heal. We'll be back after this quick break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1 when you're ready to speak. It will come right to you and get your thoughts. And we're going to take area code 313 after this break. So stay with us.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to speak.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down to earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naeem Latif, executive producer, sitting in for our dear sister, Dr. Debbie Green. And she, of course, is recuperating and regaining that strength so she can get back out there and help those who struggle with grief and sadness and despair because they really don't know what to expect out of life. Well, today we're sharing what really happens after we die, because now we know for sure. So let's go to our phone lines and talk to area code 313-442 Grand Rising. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your comments.
This is Gary. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, this is Gary Hunter, Pastor Gary Hunter out of Detroit.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Wonderful.
Yes. You know, I'm very interested to know your thoughts because this is a challenge for many who are following traditional religious beliefs and may even use the concept of hell quite frequently as a means of telling people what will happen to them if they don't conform to behaviors that the society decides is appropriate. So how does that affect how you would present your message if the thought put forth was that there is no hell after this life? How would that affect your belief system or even how you preach?
First of all, you would have to give me some seriously spiritual authority that is coming from. But before we go there, I got to. This is what bothers my thought pattern. Spoil not the child, spare not the rod. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He making me lie down in green pastures, my rod and my staff. If we're to believe in the God's way, if we're to believe in the principles that the way we were raised and taught as Christians, all of what you just said becomes the biggest challenge to, do I hear God or do I hear this woman on the radio? Do I hear God and promise of watching what some have seen as success? Or do I pull away and say, let me just show love, love, love? We have a whole society of children that got nothing but love, no discipline, and that's what's raining havoc on our community. Not all, but if you ever were a part of the juvenile system or you dealt with youth, the first thing they tell you is that my mama didn't whoop me, my mama didn't discipline me, my mama... And when you start talking to them, they say to you, I wish somebody had stopped me. So I don't buy this love, love, love with no correction, no discipline. It does not work. We have a whole society of non-church, non-disciplined, non-corrected children that's pulling guns, that's stabbing people, young women that's just out in the street fighting without a cause just because they saw something on Instagram, meeting up at people's house. When you know the real scope and when you travel, and you ain't even got to travel no more, you just touch your phone and go into any of the Facebook posts or the Instagram posts of the ignorance. But they all talk about their mama love them, my daddy love me. And so many relationships are full of dysfunction because nobody has a fear of the loss because I can move on. Even in relationships, women listening right now, men listening right now, disrespect who they have because they don't fear losing them because they figure they can move on to the next. If that means by the time I'm 30 or 40, I done slept with 20 men, 50 men, 100 men. It don't matter. My moral standing and fear of who I am doesn't matter. When you take away the fear, you take away the moral guarded protection. Love without discipline is not love. I can't just hug you, and you keep slapping me. You keep beating me. No. There got to be some fear of replication that this is not going to work. If you I think it's psychology, maybe that 102 or 3, where it teaches you there's a part of the brain that says to you when not to do something because there's a repercussion. And to say to people, because I love you, don't do this, and there's no consequences if I do. Our jails are full of young men who got, and I've been down there, a baby mama downstairs talking about she love him, another girlfriend downstairs talking about she love him, a mama, a grandmama. My daddy used to say, go to jail if you want to. I bet I ain't coming to get you. Now, with my mother probably have come get us? We weren't willing to, and she loved, both of them loved us. My daddy showed a different kind of love based upon the discipline that he got from his upbringing. Did something wrong, you got to whoop. I mean, we got too many damn whoopings because, I mean, you drop a glass, you get a whooping. You knock the phone over, you get a whooping. You didn't do your dishes, you get a whooping. You know, some of us are from the age where, as a matter of fact, on my Facebook post, you go to a Gary Hunter. My shovel got used yesterday, twice, here in Detroit. And I posted a picture this morning of how clean it looks compared to the neighbors. And it comes from discipline from my daddy. He didn't wake up and in the morning and didn't have the snow shoveled or the grass cut. Discipline. He didn't wake up and the dishes wasn't done. My daddy would whoop you in the bed. All of us had a dish day. And if your dish day was changed and he didn't know, you still got the whooping. And then the other person got the whooping. You know, you ever got one of those whoopings? I'm going to whoop all y'all, you know, because, you know, you didn't did something, you didn't got away with it. No, I'm not saying take it to the abuse side of it. But I hear you, and it's dangerous for us to hear that love does it all. It's dangerous for us to hear that discipline does it all. I know I've been around children. Didn't understand yes and no. It was I went to a court here another day, and the judge happened to be white, is dealing with a black defendant, young lady. She's already on probation, drinking and driving. She's already got to take a piss test or whatever you call it. For the first case, once a week. The judge said, well, I'm going to give you 2 a week. So if that means if we can use one of those, fine, you have it twice a week. But if not, it's going to be 3 times a week. If she had been disciplined prior to, first of all, she come in there looking like a boy with a pants tagging the whole 9 yards, which means the whole atmosphere looks at you a different way. I watch everybody get a personal bond but her. Her whole makeup, it don't mean that she wasn't loved, but I guarantee you she don't understand discipline when she's on probation, still getting in trouble, and got caught driving drunk again and without a license. I'm saying to you, y'all can make up any excuse you got. Any of the non-believers who want to say that where the Bible really come from and all the rest of that. I don't know what element of the earth you live in where you could actually just snatch God out of it and we were made from monkeys. I don't agree with it. I believe that we were created by through the image of God and that God had something to do with it. I don't have time to argue with it on the way to death. You got life, living, and then we own the way to death. If we're right. Glorified, hallelujah, I get to heaven. I try my best to do people right. If it was all just a hoax, I'd rather take that chance than to end up in hell. And if we have no consequences, we're back to the Wild Wild West. The white man thinks he can take the land from the Indians. The Indians don't even understand the whole demographics of how they got taken advantage of. In most cases, even in cowboy movies, you see it was more Indians than it was cowboys. But because of the perception of the fear of the guns and everything else, the Indians still kept fighting. And we got to still fight for our children. We got to still fight for our relationships. We got to still fight every day. And let me say this. If you think discipline don't work, if you think discipline is not essential, just do me a favor. Go somewhere and drink some bleach like Donald Trump instructed y'all to. And see if the discipline in your mind don't kick in before you, when you pour it in the cup. If the discipline that somebody told you, if you drink this, is going to kill you. If it don't kick in, then maybe all of what you're saying about discipline is right. But the discipline of knowing the results of anything changes the theory on the reciprocal behavior of action. You are a product of the atmosphere that you are conducive to when you accept it in your spirit and mind. Most of us don't want to be killed by a police. So the discipline of making sure we're not in those spaces, and even though it's some crazy police out there, some racist police out there, some stupid police out there, you still can end up dead, because it really ain't about you and what you do. It's about them and how they react to what you do. And life is the same way. It's like relationships. You know, me and you had this discussion. People think they can do what they want to do. But if you're raised with a mother and father, that's in your mind. If you're raised in dysfunction, let me back up off the word dysfunction. If you were raised in a different atmosphere of what love should be in terms of one-on-one or monogamous or either wild and free, and whether it's sickle cell, herpes or AIDS or any other STD, there's a reason why there's structure and discipline in everything we do. The likelihood of the demonic spirits, and I'm going to call them demonic spirits, the negative spirits, or you can call it that, you can call it whatever you want to call it. The likelihood of your mind and spirit being confused and not accepted of the discipline and the structure is more likely when you spend more intimate time, either intimate in the environment or intimate actually physically. When you are accepting of an atmosphere, you will become part of the atmosphere that you accepted of. If you're hanging around pimps, okay? If you're hanging around pimps, you don't think?
Well, hold on a second. Gary, you got a response from Facebook. Someone wrote a response to what you said. Catherine Desotel says, I personally was taught to fear my father, and we definitely feared him. In the end of his days, I cared for him through Alzheimer's and cancer, and I had PTSD while taking care of him. It brought back all that fear from childhood and rocked my adult world almost to a nervous breakdown. I now believe fear can be used to harm a young child. I do, although, believe in discipline, but more so in the way you are discussing, teaching them why not to do something. It is the better lesson, in my opinion. Gee, so that's what she said. Now, I agree in discipline, but discipline means training to act in accordance with rules. We have been believing it means beatings, and that comes out of our slave experience of being beaten for every little thing. Our parents are merely passing on what they learned from those who were abusing us to instill fear in us,
not to keep
us in a state of fear. So that method of discipline, It instills fear, but it does not instill wisdom.
Let's not bring abusive, evil intent with love and discipline. We didn't get discipline from slavery. We got abuse from slavery. Discipline comes from. Wait a minute. Discipline.
They didn't have the better skills in child raising, and so they only imitated what they knew. They only did what they knew. They didn't have the wisdom to know that you don't instill a child with wisdom by giving them fear of you. You only give them fear of you. The best teaching is
from Africa. They tell
you
very clearly,
not because you think your parents are going to beat you. So it's time for us to raise our skills and not our hands, as my sister Asada says in her book, Beating Black Kids. When you think about all the times that you got beat for things that were just errors and or mistakes or not even knowing, did that really make you a better person? And most people say, oh, yeah, it made me a good person. But it really doesn't, because that injustice comes out somewhere, either in conflict in your personal relationships or even in the way you raise your own children. And our children might forgive us for our ignorance, but it did not give them wisdom to be instilled with fear. It only gave them fear, which, of course, there is resentment. And that is not love. It's only our parents did the best they knew how. We need to know better. We need to learn better. Because we beat them and we think that God is a reflection of us. Instead of us being made in God's image, we want to make God in our image. Mean-spirited, cruel, insensitive, unloving. We think God is what we are. When we need to learn how to be the image of God that we are, which is only love. God is only love. And love gives guidance, not confusion, over being beaten for something you don't even know why. That's confusion. That's not discipline. That's confusion. And it's going to create resentment and anger. And it doesn't make better people. If that method of raising children made better people, the world wouldn't be as it is. We're looking at children who've been neglected. That's not the same thing as being given love. When your parents weren't home and you had to raise yourself, that's not being given love. That's being given neglect. So what we're seeing is neglect, not love. That's why they were not given understanding.
Can I respond to what the young lady said?
So what she said is that she ended up with post-traumatic stress disorder from memories of that kind of child raising where you're beaten and fear and living in fear. That's trauma. That's not discipline. That's not love. That's trauma. And that's what we give our children in our ignorance, because it was given to us in our parents' ignorance, because it was given to them and their parents' ignorance. So it's time to stop the cycle of ignorance. There is a better way to raise a child. And love does not mean neglect. It doesn't mean you ignore them when they do something hurtful. It means you teach them why not to do it. And hitting them is not teaching. We need to have more wisdom and not repeat the ignorance of our parents who injured us emotionally and did not prepare us for good, solid, stable, emotional relationships with others, because they instilled us with so much pain. And that's why we struggle in our relationships today, because we're still carrying that. And it's not love.
Can I say something?
Yes.
Respond to the young lady, and we can't. Let's be fair. We can't jump and say everything is a free for all, and no one's saying you beat a child the way some of us got beat growing up. Do I say it may have helped me? Yes. Also, was taught love and favor and faith, and what the young lady, you know that. You can get anxiety and all the rest of that stuff without ever getting beat. I know some people who didn't get beat hardly at all, and you know my friend. And all she used to talk is, I got anxiety. Don't talk about that. I got anxiety. I don't talk about that. And then I did the best I could to keep drilling in her faith in favor of God, faith in favor of God. And if you don't walk in faith, fear will take over whether you get a whooping or not. Because this was a person who didn't grow up with the strict discipline. And they did what they wanted to do. And now fear. So,
yeah,
the young lady who's listening, let me finish. To the young lady who made the comment, I don't subscribe to anybody being beat to the point where it becomes traumatizing. I do believe there's a thin line between love and discipline that cannot be ignored. And that just love, 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 and I've just seen it too many times. I got a friend right now whose son is in jail. Never whip that little boy. Let him do what he want to do. Just sporting, sporting, sporting. And all I'm saying to you, it don't mean that you can get disciplined and don't end up in jail or whatever. A bad decision don't come because you got love right, wrong, and different. A bad decision come because you were not taught the consequences. And mama kept letting you just do what you want to do. And I just lived through that the last 4 years. And by the grace of God, all you can do is put in people, even when they are not being taught. I don't subscribe to, I got to tell my daughter or my son, go take a shower 10 times. I don't subscribe to, I buy you a whole set of silverware. And a couple months later, I come over your house and you ain't got not one fork. Or barely got a spoon, because your daughter literally throws them away, and you might be doing it too. The lack of discipline and
so you
the
think beatings caused that not to happen. You think more beatings was the answer for that behavior not to occur. Is that what you're saying?
Do discipline have to mean beating? No.
No, discipline doesn't mean beatings at all. Discipline is teaching to conform to rules. You don't have to hit a single person in order to teach them something. If you have the skills to teach, you don't have
the
skills, and you're going to act out in your frustration, and that's what you hit. People hit because they don't have the knowledge and skills on how to teach. So they think, I'm going to use force, because they don't have skills. If our parents had skills, they would never have hit us ever. If they had skills and knowledge and patience, they didn't have the skills.
I had a friend about 20 years ago who had two sons, and they was just running her crazy. And I said to her one day, if you don't discipline them now, the county jail is going to discipline them later. And she was of the opinion you don't hit and all the rest of that stuff. And I saw her some years later. I mean, I saw her before some years later, but I saw her some years later. Because she's watching her nephews get in all kind of chaos. But she has to learn, you don't have to continue the physical discipline. But it needs to be some consequence. You can take this all the way to the bank. If you give a child no discipline whatsoever and no consequence, you asked him for danger. I don't care. We can't talk about this as if though we don't know the circumstances. When we look out amongst us, the studies have proven. Wait a minute, Naima. No, the studies have proven.
We got to take a break. It's time for a break. So make your last statement, then we're going to go to a break.
The studies have proven children that don't go to Sunday school, children that don't go to church, or any type of structured learning with some type of discipline end up more in trouble than children who do. Children that go to Sunday school and stuff like that read faster and better pre-K or whatever the scrap said than children who don't have anything and just play and no structured learning, no structured behavior. And watch this. Don't you love it when you see a young man or young lady and they say, yes, sir, no, sir. Thank you, ma'am. Yes, no. Instead of discipline ain't just.
But you can teach those things without hitting them. You can teach respect without beating. We got to take a break, Gary. Thanks so much for your comments. We got a couple other calls we're going to take. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you called because that's the perspective. I want people to hear that perspective because it's a common one. But I want us to also examine what are the consequences of us using violence because we don't know how to teach with love. And love is not neglect or ignoring inappropriate behavior. It takes skills to teach, and that's what we must learn, the skills. We're going to come to 779-801. Caller, you're next. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be right back after this quick message, so stay with us.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, sitting in for Dr. Debbie Green. Of course, she is recovering and regaining her strength, and we send her all the healing energies and look forward to her coming back next Thursday. And we have been talking about what really happens after you die. Well, now we know for sure. And what we have learned from those who have been through the death experience and have recalled it under hypnosis, and those who have been through the death experience and have been resuscitated afterwards on the operating table perhaps, they have all explained there is no hell. And What we actually have is a life review in which we can see how we affected others and see how others affected us. And we can see with a clarity and an understanding. There is no angry, punitive God ready to cast us into a lake of fire. That method of using fear might help people conform to behavior, but it doesn't give them wisdom to make good decisions. And if they choose not to believe, then there's nothing left to give them a reason to do right by others, unless they understand the reality of that life review. And the fact that you see and feel what you did to others, and it doesn't feel good when you caused pain, but it's you that judge yourself. Can people who are believing traditional religions accept that reality? And can we use this understanding to best train our children? Well, the idea of teaching with love, our friend Carolyn Dizzletail says amen to that. Actually giving wisdom and understanding as opposed to fear. And Grand Rising to Deborah Smith, our third Saturday host. And Deborah says, when children ask why, answer them. No matter how many times they ask, even if it's, are we there yet? Just give them knowledge. She says, always teaching, always learning. Yes, that is what we do because children want to understand. So give them knowledge. And Vieta says, I heard yes, ma'am, communicated to me from some tenants I had, but they neglected to care for my property after only 2 months renting. Words don't always align with right action. Yeah, well, okay, you can say all the politeness, but did you do what you should have done? Yes, Vieta says, those words are nice to hear, and they're good for your ego and might even mean you were raised with politeness, but you still have to be raised with a sense of responsibility, she points out, and we agree. So teaching responsibility is something that can be done without beating. And I don't say discipline because a beating is a beating. It's not discipline. Discipline is training. It's teaching to act in accordance with rules. And if you have skills, you can do it without violence. And hitting is violence. I don't care if you call it spanking. It's violence. And you can't get peace from violence. I'm sorry. It doesn't work. If it was working, it would have worked, and we'd have peace. We don't. And there's a reason. So let's go to our phone lines and go to 779-801. I believe we've got another wise sister on the line, Maika Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us today. Give us your thoughts on what Pastor Gary Hunter had to say and your experience with child rearing and that belief that there's a hell awaiting the misbehaving people. What are your thoughts?
Okay. Thank you for having this topic. It's a very serious topic that has to be addressed. And thank you to the pastor who shared what he shared. And at some point, I would like for him to ponder what it means in the 23rd Psalms when it says, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. What does that mean? Because literally, people are relating to the rod, spare the rod, spoil the child. Well, did God, what is God saying there? And I'd like for anybody else to discuss that with me at any particular time. My email is maikamaika@yahoo.com. And that's spelled Myeka@yahoo. So we have a lot of things have been said. There are very few people that I totally agree with on most anything because there are different aspects of communication. Like I was speaking to our good friend Warren Houston recently, and he was presenting to me, he's a lawyer, a case that he had to deal with personally. And my response to what he said was, some decisions you make, you have to take emotions out of them. So when the discussion comes up, whatever it is, how much emotion you invest in it causes us to know that there are some issues that you haven't resolved in relationship to that. I mean, you may be saying the right thing, but you're saying it the wrong way. You know, and what we have to do is we have to say the right thing the right way for the right reason to get the right result. The right thing the right way for the right reason to get the right results. So it's not just a speaking. It's an understanding. It's a communication that is full and covers everything, but it's not driven. It's the mind is thus driven by the emotions instead of our sensations. And, you know, our bodily functions, you know, heartbeat, respiration, all that stuff go on when you get emotionally involved in something. Well, that can cloud your rational and reasoning ability, but that's why you have to do it for the right reason. So that's a degree of understanding. That's like nonviolence is that. You're doing the right thing the right way for the right reason to get the right result. You can, I knew a guy who fed the birds because he said that God would bless him. And Reverend Bevel corrected him and said, no, man, you got to feed the birds because the birds need feed, not because you're going to get a blessing. You can't rig you into it. That's an emotional involvement in the reasoning of why you're doing it. And I'm saying that to you. So I have two yes-no questions for you. I'm going to ask you not to give an explanation after you say yes or no, please.
Okay.
Were you ever hit as a child?
Yes.
Were you ever hit by a male?
Yes.
Okay. So have you healed those injuries of yes? That trauma?
Yes. Yes.
In what way did you heal it? What therapy did you use to heal it?
Understanding. Because first of all,
Before you can come to an understanding, you have to heal. The therapy has to be applied to eliminate the emotional stress that has been put on you. That's how you take the emotions out of it. So many people want to leave emotions out of their equation, and I've heard you do that a lot of times, spirit, mind, body. No, you have to include emotions. Emotions is the driving force that creates everything for you. It drives the mind to create a language, to create a plan so that you can have an outcome. That's what the emotions do. But we have been taught to take emotions and let it drive our bodies to do things that we later regret. And then we're ashamed of those things that we do, so we can't admit the truth of it. That's the ego comes in to play then, because it's got to make sure that you come out on top and that you're right. You know, but however, you're not doing the right thing the right way for the right reason. So you're not getting the right result. Because in the right result, it comes to a, if I'm advocating for you, then there should be no way where that's a threat to anybody. Because within reason, whatever good comes from me, it's a benefit to everybody.
Absolutely.
In one way or another. But there won't be any conflict. There won't be any friction in the discussion, you know, like between you and the pastor. There was intensity in you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because...
Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, and some people would say that passion also. I'm saying to you, Naima. First of all, Naima, listen, I'm saying to you, I don't believe you had the therapy to heal the trauma that came from your childhood and from the interaction you had with a male that attacked you. And as a result, you can't really discuss hitting and not hitting from a reasonable, logical position, because you'd have to take emotions out of that discussion. Too many of us are involved in emotional investment in everything.
Okay, you know? Well, that's your opinion, and that's okay.
That's your opinion.
But I like my passion about this. I'm not trying to be non-emotional. I'm trying to convey the passion that I feel I'm very passionate about advocating for our children who are being abused by parents who are using methods that are harmful. So I'm passionate about that, and I love my passion because it's a good thing. And it means that I understand the harm that that does because of my experience. It doesn't mean I haven't healed. It means I understand it.
You elaborated on that earlier. Can I add something else? Because I just started. Levels and degrees of chastisement of children. There are levels and degrees of chastisement for children. I was torturing one of my children one day, and my daughter by another mother called, and I told her about it. She said, "Oh, you can't be hitting so and so and so and so. That's not right." I said, "Okay, cool, okay." A couple of years later, she had a child. She and her husband were together in Florida, and he had to leave. All the child rearing had been with him and her all the time, and then he had to leave. So then she calls me one day and says, "I had to hit my child," and she's crying, you know? I said, "Yeah, all you need is the experience. When you have the experience, then you can really talk. And then you can show results as a result of that. There are real serious issues in terms of males. They really do take serious the militaristic point of view. And you're not going to get that out of them. And you're not supposed to. Because God creates hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes. That's our chastisement. You know, all kind of things happen to us when we don't follow the will of God. It's the will of God that has to be exemplified and expressed more than anything else, not our emotional attachment to our pain and our suffering in the discussion of what should happen with somebody else. Yes, I agree. We should not hit, but we've heard of holding patterns that airplanes take. You know, when it's coming in, it can't land. Hitting for me, my children, which was basically a whipping, and I'm glad my mother and father whipped me, my dad at least, all she had to say was me, "I'm going to tell your dad when he comes. And I said, "Mom, whatever you want me to do, what is it?" You know, I look at my brother, what he get a whipping for? And I do that because I never liked people hitting on me. I've never enjoyed that. And,
So have you healed from that trauma that you had?
Yes, I did. I even took that. Even though it was a painful, even though it was trauma, I had to heal from that because I don't fear anything. My mother and father whipped me in love. I knew where I was going to get hit. It was going to be on my butt or my thighs. I was not going to get slapped. I was not going to get spit on. Nothing was going to get thrown at me. None of that stuff was going to happen to me. See, those are levels of chastisement. So then you just start discussing.
I got to take another call.
How do you chastise a child? That's real. Okay, thank you so much for sharing.
I want you to ask this question. Before I take the next two calls, I want to ask you this one question. If you knew that being hit traumatized you, why did you choose to inflict that on your children when you knew it traumatized you to experience that?
Well, it wasn't. I said they hit me out of love. It wasn't trauma, see, at that level at which they hit me. It was like me putting my hand in fire so that I know that it's hot, because that's real. It was out of love. See, it says, "Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." So the rod can be used out of love, in love. It's real. It's a level of balance within the human psyche. We have to balance the masculine and the feminine. And the masculine is a yang force. It cannot be changed. You just have to understand how to relate to it so that you don't trigger it. Because then it's not going away. Yang will never go away. Okay, peace.
Well, thank you, Maika. I'm going to take these other two calls. And we'll give them an opportunity to respond. As far as my rod and my staff, What does a rod do? Now, we think it's something to hit with, but a rod is something that you use to guide. Just like, you know, when you saw Moses and he had the rod in his hand, and it's kind of like using it as a walking stick, and use the rod so that the tribes that were following him out in the wilderness, they could see the rod. It was a symbol of guidance. So a rod is something that guides, not beats. It guides. That's how a rod can comfort you. My rod and my staff comfort me. You can't get comforted by a beating. So if you spare the rod, that means you're sparing guidance. You're not guiding. You spoil the child. Not if you beat the child, you don't spoil them. If you don't guide them, you spoil them. That's the misunderstanding of that, if you want to look at that verse as being a true and authentic verse coming from divine inspiration. Why is it hard for people to understand that God is only love? Why do we want God to be mean like we are? Why do we want that? But let me take this next call. I'm going to take 773-984, and then I'm going to take 407-701. Area code 773-984. Give us your name, where you're calling from. You got a couple of minutes? Give us your comments.
This is Rashida Ali.
Hey, Rashida Ali. All right, Rashida, give me your thoughts.
My comment is, you know, when I was a child, I never got sick. Never, never, never. I got plenty taken away from me.
Do you regret that?
Huh?
Do you regret not getting hit?
No, but I think it would have been better because when I got married, no, before I got married, I was engaged to this jealous guy, and he hit me because his own inadequacy and out of his jealousy, and I lost my mind because I had never in my life had a whooping in my life because I was, like, giving down, and when I didn't do it, pretty was taken away, but I knew better not to get beat because I was obedient. But when I got older and into relationship, I was hit. And then when I got married, my husband, he was, just because he was jealous. And I got married, and my husband hit me, and I lost my mind. I actually stood up and defended myself, but then I said a prayer because I pulled a gun to him because it was shocking. I lost my mind, but I didn't hurt anybody. I just called the police and told them to get him out of my house, and I was never married no more. My father never hit me. I never got a whooping, but I was reprimanded. And it was so devastating when I got hit by a man, I didn't know what to do. I actually didn't know what to do. It was traumatizing. And I think that's why I kind of felt it. I was afraid of injury, but I'm not a scary cat. But I remember reading in the Quran where a man's supposed to strike, have the privilege to strike a woman, but it's strategically. You don't hit her and beat her and bruise her, and you don't hit her above her waist. But I was hit in my face by my husband, and that really was devastating. I called the police because I was getting ready to do something that probably would have put me in prison for life. Because he hit me in my face and my nose bled. And I had a weapon in the house. So I don't believe in weapons. But no, I was never hit as a child. Never. And I had a father, but he was in the military. But never, never, never have I ever been struck until I became adult and got into a relationship with a jealous, insane man. And that was devastating and shocking. I didn't even know what to do.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was. Well, thank you for sharing that, Rashida, because hitting comes out of a person's own frustration. And Maika, you know I love you, but I got to say this. I see every time a person who has used that method of discipline, if they hear that it's incorrect, there's always defensiveness. It's difficult for us to look at what we may have done in raising our children as not being correct. But if we learned the other method of guidance, then we could understand that we did what we did because we didn't know better. And when we learn better, we do better. I understood my parents did what they understood to be the best way of teaching. And that's where the healing comes from. You forgive when you understand that people did the best they knew how. And you learn from that. And you learn better because you can evaluate what was done that was harmful. And you know I love you, sis. But we gotta help parents parent better this next generation. So,
and
Rashida,
you know what else? I never will my son.
Doesn't mean you hit your wife. I'm sorry, what was that?
I said, I never hit my son. I would take privy from him and stuff. But I never whooped my son because I wasn't raised to getting beat. But then as soon as I entered into a matrimony, because that brother had a misunderstanding about the Quran, said, strike your woman. But he said, don't hit her above her waist. And I was hit in my face. And I'm married to a Muslim, and he was an intelligent brother.
Yeah.
But when he hit me, that was the end of the marriage.
Absolutely.
I couldn't stand it.
Even though he might have said he hit you out of love, but there's no love in beatings. I know y'all think I should beat the kids if they do wrong, but there's something else that you must do. We'll have to do a whole show on how to raise your children without violence. Thank you so much, Rashida. We appreciate you. Let me see if I can. I don't know if I can get both of y'all in, but I'm going to try to get in. Let me go to area code 407-701. If I don't get you, 773-407, I'm sorry. We've run out of time, but we've got Viata on the line. Give us your thoughts, Viata.
Thank you, Naima. Bob, join me tomorrow morning on Health and Wellbeing. We're going to be talking about the economics of diabetes and why our government wants us sick, weak, ignorant, and compliant. I wanted to piggyback real quick on what Maika said. You know, we can, from my experience, and now that I'm a health coach, healed most of my triggers. We can think we're speaking all the right words at the right time to the right people, and then we trigger people into anger. And so I realized that all that training I've had with my husband for 40 years, who triggered the hell out of me, most of our marriage, that the purpose of recognizing when people are triggered is to show them love. Listen, overstand, validate, and engage. So just as you said, Naima, the solution is love. We need to read Asada's book, Beating Black Kids. That's what opened my eyes to a better way to discipline children. And it's not by beating them and slapping them and all, but communicating with them the love, listening to them, even 5 and 7-year-olds. I got 2 grandchildren I have to listen to all the time intently because they're so smart. And their parents don't want any beating or spanking, so I have to agree with that. And so I'm learning how to talk and listen, mostly listen to them and then communicate love. Listen, overstand, validate, and engage. So thank you, Naima. Good conversation.
Yes. Thank you for calling in. Appreciate you so much. We're going to probably invite Asada to come on and talk again about that. I know it's hard, but we have to understand that being able to talk to your children from respecting them as being valued, even though they're young. And that, know that equally.
We've come to the end of our show today. But you can hear every show in the archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution.
Thank you all so much. Thank you all.
You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page.
www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution.
Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, xiexie. India, zanyaba. Japan, arigato. Korea, kamsahamnida. Russia, spasiba. Germany, danke. Poland, dziękuję. France, merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, geret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, tashakor. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.